You are Locked On Spurs, your daily San Antonio Spurs podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I am Jeff Garcia, and this is Locked On Spurs. Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Spurs, the Locked On Podcast Network. And your San Antonio Spurs are back in action tonight, hosting the Los Angeles Lakers. Yep, it's another game versus these two teams. And hopefully the Spurs will come out on the winning end, unlike the last meeting between LA and SA. Also on the show, we're going to be looking back at the Spurs' recent mini two-game road trip, see how they fared, and maybe look ahead a little bit, because they're going to be at the AT&T Center for quite some time. So to do that and a lot more, I'm joined by Jim Lefko, my colleague over at News 4 San Antonio. Jim, welcome back to Lockdown Spurs, and forgive me, I am fighting a cold.
Well, always good to be back on the show with you, Jeff, and wish you felt better. So I'm sending out happy thoughts.
There you go. Thank you so much. I could definitely use that. But, Jim, another collective unit is not feeling too well. They might be under the weather as well, that being the Spurs. They're coming off a two-game roadie, the recent loss against the Lakers. They were in there nip and tuck until that fourth quarter when a certain player named LeBron James took over. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the recent loss. What happened?
You know, if there's ways to quantify losses as good losses or bad losses, I'd put this in the category of a good loss, especially in perspective of the Utah debacle from the night before.
Oh, yeah.
I thought the Spurs played well against the Lakers. They didn't get blown out, so that's a positive sign. But as you mentioned, too much LeBron in the fourth quarter and really too much three-point shooting in the fourth quarter from the Lakers. You know, Utah set a franchise record, you know, making more than they missed from three-point range the night before. So you figured the Spurs would make that an area of emphasis. But there the Lakers were in the fourth quarter, hitting three after three. And some were contested, some weren't. You know, LeBron hit one from about 5 feet behind the arc. You know, it's frustrating, but it's not an effort situation. It's just, I think it's an intelligence kind of thing, understanding what LeBron's doing when he drives and kicks, understanding you can't foul a three-point shooter. You know, there was a really painful three-point shooting foul by Davis Bertans, who closed out a little bit too rigorously and got a three-point foul there, and that's always a no-no. So they need to be smarter about the perimeter defense, and they need to be a little bit more salty in the fourth quarter because, as you mentioned, LeBron took over, scored about 20 points in that quarter. And even when the Lakers were down, you just had a sense they were in control. And it was another frustrating loss for the Spurs, but I'd put it in the positive category given some of their other lethargic losses in recent weeks.
You know, the players themselves, they were frustrated, not only with the loss to the Lakers, but just the losses that have been piling up of late. Yesterday, I wrote an article about the Spurs All-Stars, LaMarcus and DeMar. And you can already hear it in their voice. They're getting frustrated. You know, DeMar talked about being frustrated. LaMarcus even said, all we can do is watch film and move on. I mean, do you think this frustration could blossom into something worse?
Well, the weird thing about the Laker loss on Wednesday was that their three stars played like stars. You know, Rudy Gay goes for a season high, 31 points?
Right.
DeRozan, 32, and Aldridge, 21. So, you know, we've all seen that stat about how the Spurs win when Aldridge scores 20. And here he had his two wingmen both over 30. So that's, almost 84 points between the three of them. That should be enough. But my question is, where was the rest of the team?
Yeah.
You know, Brent Forbes, 1 of 7. Patty Mills, 2 of 8. Derek White, 1 of 5. You know, you've got some role players here who stunk it up, to be honest. And it's not like those guys are playing defense either. You know, Brent Forbes has always been a defensive liability since the day he got here. And if he's only going to shoot 1 for 7 from the field, he shouldn't be on the court.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised at all if he gets benched with another poor performance like that. His body language was poor. And I wouldn't be surprised if they sent him back to Austin for a little seasoning. I think they should be very disappointed in Forbes. He's got more talent than he showed. And if you want to pin a loss on anybody, you know, that Laker game, I look at the perimeter supporting players who did not come through at all when the big three did.
Yeah, it was not a good fourth quarter for San Antonio in the fourth versus the Los Angeles. You look just at the fourth quarter alone, Jim. I believe only White and Pirtle were not in the negative of a plus minus. Everybody else was in the minus. And we're being generous here. I think Pirtle was a zero or something, you know. But yeah, I mean, just you mentioned about players not stepping up, but collectively they just did a poor performance down the stretch.
Well, you know, this is going to be a defensive challenge team, and I don't know what got into their head when they were up 7 or 8 in the fourth quarter, but that was a winnable game against a team they'd already defeated twice this year and that they're going to see again, you know, tonight. So, you know, I just don't understand the intensity. You know, LeBron, he's going to get his, but you can't let him go, you know, to the rim with, you know, such a cavalier attitude. I mean, he's either going to the hole and finishing, getting a foul, or kicking it out to a wide open shooter for a three. And, you know, Kyle Kuzma, you know that he can shoot from the outside. You know, where's the perimeter defense? Lonzo Ball seems to be a spur killer. They know what he can do, and yet he still, you know, hit 3 3-pointers. I think there were there were about half a dozen Lakers who hit multiple threes against the Spurs last night.
Yeah.
You're not going to win in today's NBA by giving up that kind of point production. And again, they had just done it in negative fashion against Utah. So that had to be a talking point in the locker room. And, you know, Pop's frustrated. The players are frustrated. But, you know, I think so much attention has been, you know, directed toward the star players. And I think for the most part, the star players have played like stars. You know, you could look back at Rudy Gay getting shut out in Utah, but look how he responds, you know, with a 30-plus point game. So I think night in, night out, they're getting what they need out of their big men. You know, Aldridge had a bit of a shooting slump. But I'm looking at the perimeter guys and the bench guys and wondering why they aren't showing up on a more consistent basis.
Yeah, it was not an ugly sight in L.A., at least in the fourth quarter. But let's rewind the clock a little bit. Let's talk about that Utah loss. What happened? I mean, it was just like some detonation went off in Utah, and the Spurs were in the middle of that bomb. Spurs simply didn't show up. You mentioned about the Jazz setting all sorts of three-point records. Kyle Korver in his debut, you know, he goes off for his points, and especially from deep. The Spurs just simply have, I don't know what it is about the road, but being away from the AT&T Center really has them in a bind, Jim.
Well, and you know, the size of the deficit is just astounding. They'd only had 5 30-point losses prior to last week in the Pop era, and they had 3 in the past 7 or 8 days. That's staggering. You're going back 20 years to find almost as many 30-point losses, and it is a pride thing. You know, this year they've already given up 135 points or more, including the Utah game, 5 times. Previous 29 years, 4 times. So, I mean, these are record-breaking, astounding generational statistics that they're achieving or underachieving right now. And again, when you let a team shoot, I think Utah was 20 of 33 from 3-point range. And that's a phenomenal percentage from 2-point range. You wouldn't think they'd hit that many shots wide open. So yeah, it was a hot team, but my gosh, you gotta do something to disrupt that. And it's funny, the Spurs aren't a prolific 3-point shooting team, and they're a very poor 3-point defending team.
Yeah.
And you know, Pop's been on record talking about how he hates the three and all this. Well, in today's NBA, I don't think the team can afford to play with that kind of mindset. You know, I'm not saying they should shoot more threes, but they certainly need to make it tougher on the other team when they're firing away unimpeded from 25 feet.
The Spurs, at least as of this recording, rank 4th in the NBA at allowing the opposing teams a higher percentage of 3-point accuracy. You mix that with just terrible defense overall and, you know, a vanishing act like they pulled against the Lakers. That's a mixture for more losses in the horizon if they can't just get their act together. It's a big question, Jim. Do you still believe this team can get their act together?
Well, I do, because you look at the West and you see that nobody's really sorted themselves out yet. And, you know, if the Spurs were to sweep this homestand and things fell the right way, they could be right back up in the top, you know, half of the Western Conference. So it is still, a quarter of the way through the season. I think they've got time to solve what ails them, but you just haven't seen any kind of consistent play on the defensive end of the ball, and that's atypical for this team. Fans have come to expect more, and I don't even think it's a matter of holding teams under 100 points anymore. It's trying to, you know, play the kind of defense that you need in the context of the game you're playing. They could have won, you know, allowing 110 points last night. You know, it's just the kind of pace that the game is being played at right now. You need to dictate the way you're playing offensively and defensively to fit that, and that fourth quarter. You know, the Spurs played a pretty good game and a pretty good fourth quarter offensively. But when that defensive intensity, you know, goes away in the fourth quarter and you get yourself behind, you can't just keep trading baskets. And that was an unfortunate loss for them. I thought they did everything they needed to put themselves in a position to win. They had a fourth quarter lead against a team that they should have been confident against. And they weren't able to, you know, deliver the finishing blow. And I think that was what was frustrating to Spurs fans who stayed up late to watch the end of that one. Maybe they'd be rewarded and trade off for losing a little bit of sleep.
Yeah, exactly. That includes me, too. I stayed up to the bitter end. But let's go ahead and take our first break, Jim. But when we get back, we're going to look ahead beyond the Lakers game. Just talk about this six-game homestand the Spurs are about to start. All right, we are back, and I am joined by Jim Lefko of News 4 San Antonio. Follow him on Twitter, at Jim Lefko. Jim, there is a ray of hope, and we kind of alluded to that in the first segment. They're at home for quite some time, six games ahead of them. At home, they're 7-4. Their last win at home was against the Portland Trailblazers. Yes, that includes Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. They did a pretty good job, at least making it hard for them to score their points. Jim, I don't have who's ahead of me, but I think there's some kind of teams on the horizon that could pose some issues.
Well, what's interesting is the two games that they just lost to the Lakers and Jazz, guess who are next up? The Lakers and Jazz.
Wow.
So, you know, revenge being one of the great motivators, I certainly think they could win one, if not both of those games. As you mentioned, those are the first two of a six-game homestand. Spurs match up well with those teams when they're playing effectively, and I think they can win both of them. They know what's going on offensively, you know, from both those clubs. And I'd be shocked if Utah, you know, has that kind of success in three-point range again here like they had at their home place. So, you know, at worst, I think they come out of the weekend 1-1, but I think there's a chance they go 2-0, and then Phoenix comes in here. Phoenix is one of the worst teams in the NBA. They're last in the West. They pasted the Spurs in Phoenix a couple weeks ago. I think that's another revenge game. I think the Spurs take that one. They finish up with the Clippers, the Bulls, and the Sixers. Again, all games that they could win. Certainly Chicago is a bottom feeder. Clippers and Sixers are solid teams. So there's a real potential to go maybe 4-2 or 5-1 on this homestand. But it's all predicated on playing more than just a semblance of defense and getting more production consistently from that bench and from the support players beyond the big three.
Is it a sad state of affairs when Spurs fans – look at the schedule ahead and really can see this team going 0-6? I mean, is that out of the realm of possibility?
Yeah, I think it is. They're not going to lose at home to Phoenix and Chicago. Yeah, there's too much heart here, and you have too many veterans on this team. While they may not, while it may be a season-long struggle to go 500, I think at home they're going to take care of business. And, you know, I'm not ready to give up on this team yet. I like the heart that they played with last night, their Wednesday night when they – you know, did lose to the Lakers, especially in contrast to, you know, that game Tuesday at Utah. So, you know, we're still in December. A lot of people don't even pay attention to the NBA until Christmas. I think reports of their demise are, you know, premature. There are troubling signs, and I don't think there's a lot of quitters in that locker room. So I think you're going to see more intensity and more sustained quality play when they've got, you know, a couple weeks here at home.
All right, so to look at some of the home numbers. As mentioned, the Spurs are 7-4 at the AT&T Center. LaMarcus Aldridge actually plays very well at home. He averages a double-double through 11 games, 21 points per game, 10 rebounds per game. And in their seven wins, they're averaging 110.7 points per game. That's a plus 8.4. Defensively, they are holding teams to 107 points per game. But again, there's still a little troubling sign here when we look at the numbers, Jim. They still allow 47% shooting from opposing teams and 35% shooting from the three-point line. Jim, they really got to dot their I's and cross their T's shortly.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, when it happens once or twice, you think, well, that was just a hot shooting night by the opponents. But now that it's happened so many times, both on the road and at the AT&T Center, I think you have to, you know, some aspect of those numbers is predicated on the Spurs not playing aggressive defense, not getting in guys' faces, not closing out effectively. I mentioned that Bertans foul on a three-point shot Wednesday night. That's just inexcusable. You know, you need to learn how to close correctly, and I wouldn't be surprised if Pop just starts going with his best defensive players out there. And if nothing else, if they're going to lose 105-95, not 135-120. It's just not Spurs basketball. And again, I'm not advocating that they're going to lose. I just think you're going to see more and more time, and maybe the rotation's changed a little bit because he's tried to switch things up. You know, he's tried different starting lineups. The only consistent, you know, thing that we've seen most of the year is the big three starting. And really, whoever goes in those other two spots, you know, maybe it's time to give Poeltl another shot. He started the season in the starting lineup. Gasol kind of took the minutes. And then when Gasol got hurt, you know, Poeltl blossomed a bit. He's played pretty well lately. Had that great game in Utah when, you know, points were cheap. But maybe it's time to go with the two-headed monster with the two big men and let Aldridge go back to power forward and Poeltl, you know, get a shot at center. It certainly can't hurt. You know, you've got to – you know, desperate times call for desperate measures, and they're getting close to desperation. So I think I would, you know, toy around with that lineup a little bit to see who's most effective. And, you know, while it may be desperate times, there's plenty of games left to right this, you know, the ship before it indeed does sink. And at this point, there are only a few games out of the playoffs. I think if they put together a nice homestand, we'll be having a different conversation at the end of it.
I would sure be up for that kind of conversation instead of meeting with you and then talking about how poorly the Spurs have been playing. But, Jim, if the Spurs are simply just not, you know, measuring up on the defensive end, is a situation where maybe they got to go back to the old ABA days and try to run up the score, Doug Moe days, Gervin days, Michael Thompson days. You know, I mean, if they're going to beat a team, well, we can't get it done defensively. We'll just have to outshoot them.
Well, I mean, that's a thought. I would tend to disagree with that just because other teams are built more to be successful outside the three. And if the Spurs start forcing threes, you know, this is a mid-range shooting team. You know, DeMar DeRozan is not comfortable shooting beyond the arc, and he's a wonderful shooter inside the arc. Aldridge hasn't had much success out there. So I think you'd be forcing them to do something that's, you know, not in their wheelhouse. I think threes need to happen organically, you know, in the context of the offense. And I think trying to force them or try to trade the hoops with the teams like Golden State and Houston that are, you know, constructed that way is to me a recipe for disaster. I think if I was Popovich and I was, you know, figuring out what to do moving forward, I think he'd have some pretty heavy practices when they can get practice time in, and pretty big emphasis on defense, and let the offense take care of itself. You got lots of scores on that team. But if a Patty Mills or a Brent Forbes or a Derek White is not going to play the kind of defense that the Spurs expect them to play, then, you know, there's other folks on that bench or maybe around the league that they can acquire. You know, as people look at trades before the trade deadline, maybe the Spurs need to go out and find another defensive player. You know, somebody that is closer to a shutdown wingman, because I think that's what they need now. They clearly had nobody to put on LeBron last night.
Right.
And you hate to bring up the dreaded Kawhi word. But, man, when players were getting off, be it a Harden, be it LeBron, be it whoever, you know, you put Kawhi on them for three or four possessions, and it was amazing how they cooled down. So, you know, it's easy to say that when, you know, you had a player like that. There's nobody on this current roster that's that kind of perimeter defender. So, you know, it's easy for us to say they should, you know, put somebody on LeBron, but, you know, who's that going to be? And maybe that's the next piece of this puzzle. You know, find a shutdown perimeter defender who can at least give some heart and soul to what they're trying to do defensively.
Yeah, it all begins and ends at the defensive end of this, you know, issues that are surrounding the Spurs to start the season. There's been a lot of sports critics out there that are already nailing the coffin in the Spurs dynasty era, their heyday. But I agree with you. I think it's too soon to call it a season. I want to see how they do on this homestand. If they come out really well, and I think they're right back in the thick of things, considering how, as you mentioned, the West is shaping up, it being almost topsy-turvy. I think the last time I saw Jim, Memphis was number one in the league in the West. The Clippers were up there. The Nuggets were up there. It's just so such an upside-down Western Conference right now.
Well, it does change from day to day. And right now, there's two teams with seven losses atop the West, and it's Denver and Oklahoma City. If you go out of Vegas and bet that this date in December that those two will be leading the West, you could have made a lot of money. And right behind them are the Clippers, and then there in fourth place is Golden State. So those are your top four teams right now. And then you got the Lakers, Grizzlies, Trailblazers, and Mavericks right behind them. So Mavericks have 11 losses. Right now they'd be in that eighth spot. Spurs have 14 losses. So they're three games out in the loss column from being in the playoffs. And that's why this homestand is important. If they go 4-2 or 5-1, they're going to make up ground on some of the teams above them. It is an odd sight to look at those West standings and see, you know, if you look from the bottom up, there's Phoenix in 15th and there's the Spurs in 14th. Now, you know, the Suns are 4-20, but as we noted, one of those four wins, you know, came at the Spurs' expense and it was rather lopsided. So, but right down there with the Spurs or the Rockets, you know, 11-12, still under 500. And that's the team that I think is the second best team in the West still. Anybody that saw them beat up on the Spurs last week, you know, probably would be right
there
with me.
I was there, so, and I witnessed it myself, yep.
Well, and again, I don't expect, you know, the Spurs to be at the top of the West in a couple weeks, but I certainly think after this homestand you're going to see, you know, a little bit of space between them and Phoenix near the bottom.
All right, so let's go take our second break, Jim. When we get back, our final thoughts on this upcoming, six-game homestand. We are back, and I'm joined by Jim Lefko. Jim, you wrote a really good article, and it got a lot of reaction regarding the T word, tanking, at the Spurs zone. How was it received on your end? Were fans kind of agreeing with you or disagreeing with you?
Well, yeah, I think it did engender a little bit of discussion. I think diehard Spurs fans are reluctant to think that they want to waste away the final, 50, 55 games of the season. There's still a lot to be played for. It's a culture shift to think that, this is not a championship team. They won't be playing in June. There's no, sixth championship on the horizon this year. But I think a playoff spot is still a viable goal for this team. You've got some prideful veteran players like a DeMar DeRozan, Marcus Aldridge, Rudy Gay, who didn't come here to be part of any kind of rebuilding or tanking.
Right.
I think it'd be very hard for this team to tank, given the amount of payroll that they have committed, not only this year, but the next two. And I'm not sure what it gets you. Even if you start losing, are you really going to lose all the way down to the bottom of the league and then win the lottery and get whoever you think is going to be the next David Robinson or Tim Duncan? That's a lot of teams have tried that, and they call them Sacramento. They call them Atlanta.
Yep.
They call them, teams like that that just go years without being competitive. So I don't think this team is that far away. It'd be nice to see them get another piece or two to shore things up, but you tend to not judge teams at their height or at their bottom. I tend to look at what their average is. And right now their average is a little bit below 500. They need to change that around and get hot. But I don't think anybody in Spurs land that's on the organizational payroll is thinking about tanking right now. It's a nasty process. It guarantees empty seats, vitriol from the home fans who don't think that's a smart strategy. For everybody that says that they want to see him tank, let's see people spend their hard-earned money to go out and watch a team who's starting backcourt or people that should be in the G League. That's no fun. Again, ask the long-suffering fans in some of those cities we mentioned how much they enjoy watching their team lose 60 games. So I don't think you're going to see a team with LaMarcus Aldridge, Rudy Gay, and DeMar DeRozan on it ever consider tanking.
You can go read that article at the Spurs Zone. You can find that at News 4 San Antonio and Fox29SanAntonio.com. That is Jim's most recent weekly column, and it is a must-read. Please go check it out. All right, Jim, let's go ahead and wrap up this episode of Locked On Spurs. You kind of talked about it in the previous segment, but I'm going to bring it up again. Do you think this six-game homestand will make or break the Spurs season?
It's a great question. I'm still an optimist. I think they're going to have a good homestand, and then I'm going to stay here and win four games or more. I don't know if that makes their season. It might avoid breaking their season, because if they go the other way, if this is a disaster and they go 2-4 or 1-5 and, start losing touch with the bottom of that group that's contending for the final playoff spots in the West, it's not going to be pretty. So I think the schedule maker has been tough to them to this point. It gets a little bit easier for the next couple of weeks, and they need to take advantage of that. There is something to be said for home cooking and supportive fans. You're not going to hear boos out of the AT&T Center crowd, I wouldn't believe. I think they're going to be behind their team, and I think you'll see the team reflect that with the way that it plays in these upcoming six games.
I'm with you. I think this is exactly what the doctor ordered for the Spurs right now. They play well at home. The numbers show it. LMA plays better at home. Same goes for DeMar DeRozan, which, I didn't bring this up, too. At home, he averages close to six assists per game. So he gets his teammates involved. This team, just overall, is a different team at the AT&T Center. You put that with six games in the AT&T Center that, at least on paper, could be winnable for San Antonio. They're right back in the hunt. Not to say they're out of the hunt right now, because you mentioned, they're not that far away in the loss and the win-loss columns from being at least the eighth seed. So I see this as a blessing in disguise. This is exactly what the Spurs need. And I'm going to say they're going to go 4-2 on this homestand. I think that's what you pegged them as going for, right, Jim, in the last segment?
Yep. Yeah, and the point of that is, too, the teams that they're chasing. Two of the teams ahead of them are Dallas and Sacramento. And, again, at the end of the day, as poorly as the Spurs may have played to this point, those just aren't two teams that I consider, viable playoff contenders, at the end of the 82-game season. Maybe I'll be wrong. But I think there's some teams ahead of them they can catch. You're going to see some teams getting hot and some teams cooling off. And the Spurs seem to be in a position, with some health situations. We don't know when Paul Gasol is going to come back. We don't know when Lonnie Walker IV is going to join the team. But those will sure be, nice boosts for this franchise and this roster when they get those two guys in the fold.
Yeah, exactly. But Jim and I, we're done talking. We want to know what you think. How do you think the Spurs looked? Well, maybe you can answer. I can answer that now for you. Horrible in their last two games on the road. But, you know, do you have any input? We need to hear that. What about the Spurs' upcoming six games at the AT&T Center? We need to hear what you have to say about that. You can talk to me on Twitter at Jeff G Spurs Zone or email me at JeffGarcia74. And before I turn the mic over to Jim, again, go to the Spurs Zone. You want daily Spurs content? It's there, all there every day, nearly 24 hours a day, nearly. We're one day, Jim, I'll have that down. But as of right now.
You do take a couple hours of sleep each night.
Yeah, exactly. But seriously, from Jim's columns, they're phenomenal. You got to read them once a week when he puts it out, to just fun stuff, such as DeJounte Murray giving you his list of priorities as a pro. Go check it out at the Spurs Zone. Jim, take it away.
Yeah, if folks want to comment on my column or what we said here on Locked On Spurs or anything else pertaining to the Spurs, they can find me on Twitter at Jim Lefkoe.
And Jim, are you going to be beating down the AT&T Center doors for those sweet throwback T-shirts? Fans are loving that.
Yeah, that'll be cool. You know, sometimes a team's history is maybe more enjoyable than its present. I'm not concluding that just quite yet, but there's a lot of glorious days for Spurs fans to remember fondly. So throwbacks are always a great idea, and this franchise has a very rich history.
And if you want to know what Jim and I are talking about, go to the Spurs Zone. Find out what's going to happen on December 13th when the Spurs host the Clippers, and a very cool-looking T-shirt will be given away. Check that out at the Spurs Zone. But for Jim Lefkoe, I am Jeff Garcia, and we're going to put a lock on this episode of Locked On Spurs.